help inform you better for discussions. But from time to time, I at least start to lecture a little bit about what y'all are reading so that you can see that it's not just, you know, busy work for y'all. One of the things that y'all might have, y'all should be kind of thinking about as you ask the question, what do I take for granted in religion? What do I take for granted in the world or whatever? As you begin to kind of look at the different ways that you can think about religions or why there might be religions, the book basically says that there are three ways of talking about this, at least three ways of talking about this: materialist perspective, the functional perspective, and the faith perspective. y'all should think about, where do I fall inside of that framework? Do I look at religion as something that's just a product of the material conditions of the society that it's in? Do I look at religion just as something that provides useful values and customs for a society to order it? Or do I actually believe there really is some kind of reality beyond this reality, and some entity or entities beyond this reality that guide everything? Right. So be kind of thinking about that over the course of the semester, and keep it as a question about yourself, to yourself, so that as you keep, think about it this week, it may be that, when we get to the end of the fourth week after doing different explorations, that, you've moved from being a functionalist to being being someone who believes in an ultimate reality. Or you've moved from someone being an ultimate, believing in an ultimate reality to, having conditions on that based on the material reality that you encounter on a regular basis. Among the people who are probably the most famous for the scientific materialist view of religion are Feuerbach and Karl Marx. Feuerbach says that deities are projections of human qualities. And basically what's going on here is they're saying, well, because human beings, in one sense, don't want to be alone, and human beings want to understand the order that we live in, Feuerbach is saying we project onto the world our own human needs and our own human emotions and different kinds of qualities, right? So when John says, John the Apostle says in the first epistle, I think, he says God is love. And so that in itself is a very interesting thing. I won't go too deeply into this, but actually what he says is God is agape. Agape is the Greek word for Latin caritas, which is actually charity. So when John says God is charity, or when he says God is love, that's another way to say it. When he says God is love, human beings love. So Feuerbach is saying this is why we have this, we have this idea of God. It's not even a materialist notion, would be that we have this idea of God, and we project onto God our best quality. And actually, one of the best qualities of being human is being charitable, right? Helping people, giving without expecting anything back, right? Marx, on the other hand, says that religion springs basically from the material conditions of an economic framework, right? he has a very famous quote. So let's take a look at that quote. I can't tell you how many times I heard this quote when I was growing up in Waxahachie, Texas, from people who had decided they were communists because their parents had pissed them off. Man makes religion. Religion does not make man. The religious world is but the reflex of the real world. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature. The sentiment of a heartless world. And the soul of soulless conditions. It is the opium of the people. Or sometimes translated, the opium of the masses. So, Marx is basically saying that because of socioeconomic conditions, religion is utilized to keep people from
disarray.
Well, not just from disarray. It's utilized to keep people from rising up and saying, why do I only get paid $7.25 an hour? Right? Let's make it. Why does, we can tie this actually to McDonald's. What in our society couldn't be. Marx would say that a corporation like McDonald's utilizes the religious structures that are in play to make people be better workers, right? Because God likes people who are good workers to be more clean, because God likes cleanliness. To not be uppity and to not stand up to their not stand up to their managers and demand more wages, right? Because they should be lucky that they've got a job, or they should be blessed that they've got a job. So Marx would say these people are partially controlled by these religious structures. And that's the reason why, even though you can add a quarter to the menu on McDonald's board, right? You could add a quarter to every single thing on McDonald's board, and you could pay every McDonald's worker $15 an hour. Right? People will not stand up for themselves, Marx says, especially in a place like Texas, because they've allowed themselves to be indoctrinated by religion. The religion they're indoctrinated in is an authoritarianly structured religion. I'm not trying to insult anybody, but you've got a king who rules the world and orders the world according to a certain kind of structure. It's a very good, to me, Marx would also say, why can Americans not see the strange dichotomy? The overwhelming majority of Americans belong to an Abrahamic faith. They either belong to Roman Catholicism or some aspect of Catholicism, some Protestant denomination, some aspect of the three predominant Jewish faiths, or some aspect of Islam. All of those utilize the language and the metaphors of kingship. But America is a democratic republic. So Marx would say, doesn't that cause some kind of schizophrenia in the way you think about the world? That's Marx. Okay. And because of that, it becomes a kind of, oh, what happens when you do opium? Does anybody know? Anybody here ever had to take hydrocodone because you got a tooth pulled or you had a toothache?
You get kind of hot and flustered.
You get hot, flustered, you get kind of, Like, you do opium. I'm not talking from personal experience. You do opium, and you become extremely focused on how blue your shoe is. And you don't care about anything. But of course, the point is that then you need to do more opium. Next time you do opium, that doesn't happen. You need to do more opium. And that makes you a little more tired and a little more nauseous and not quite so able to move and do stuff. Yeah.
I know a kid that's on methadone, so he's like coming off heroin.
Yeah.
And he'll sit there and like he'll turn it off.
Right.
It's crazy. Like he'll smoke a cigarette. He'll fall asleep with a cigarette in his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, methadone actually is another kind of opiate,
yeah.
Right? So it's that kind of, so for Marx, this notion of religion as the opium of the masses or the opium of the people, is that it becomes a kind of living drug which can be utilized by people within the power structures to keep people docile. I'm not saying that I believe that. I'm actually not a materialist when it comes to religion. But, yeah.
Would you say that because of that, what you just said about Karl Marx would say that the schizophrenia of the Democratic Republic and the kingships, would you say that's why people put so much pressure on the president when he holds very little power in comparison to the overall government? Would you say that's why people usually blame him for the way that the economy is?
That's a really good question. And I would actually have to say that in 30 years of thinking, I've thought longer about religion than I have about the presidency, but in 30 years of watching the president of the United States become an imperial president, that is, have more and more and more authority, part of that growth in authority comes from the fact that we put into him, and up till now it's been him, we put into him more power and authority, right, because of what you're saying. So yeah, I think that actually the religion of America does tend to put into authority figures mirror the kind of power structures that you find in.
Because we don't usually consider all the branches of government and how Congress has the biggest play in what goes on in as far as laws go and the judicial systems and stuff like that.
Right.
But we do blame him for any law that's passed. Even
right.
If
I mean, if you become president of the United States, you're taking onto your shoulders the fact that the overwhelming majority of the American people, at least some faction, large faction, will blame you for every single thing that happens.
Right.
So you become you take that on. And that's very interesting because it does take on that kind of religious kingship that you would find the person in charge takes on, even though they may not be the ones that are responsible for everything that happens, they become the scapegoat for everything that happens.
Right. So, yeah. Like the forefront of the American society, though, too. So, like, you also think that they're the person that everybody perceives, like, as the first American or whatever. So, when other countries look at us and they see whoever the president is,
right,
that represents America.
Right.
That's what's there. So, even if you didn't vote for Trump, or if Trump doesn't make office, he gets there, that's why everyone's like, oh my god, this guy's going to represent
people
us.
People also don't look into politics and see that the president really only has 3 jobs that he's supposed to maintain, and that he's not responsible for our economy. We are responsible for our economy.
Well, so let's move away from there, and let's move into functionalist religion, because in one sense you've kind of begun to move over into the functions. The reason Marx would say that things are messed up is because people have allowed themselves to become sleepy and not thoughtful. These people would say, no, religion is the most useful way to order society so that things get done. Right? So we could use the same example of the McDonald's again, and we could say that religious education means that you get workers that are going to follow through on what they do, and they're going to participate in the well-ordering of the company, and they're going to, be kind to strangers who come in. So these kind of like functional appraisals all play their role. Religion is to glue the whole society together, and a couple of people have actually kind of brought this up, right? The idea that if you have no religion, then how do you have any morals? And that's a taken-for-granted sort of issue. Even though our society has instantiated a certain number of morals and values and customs that could be tied back to the Abrahamic religions, right? The assumption is that if you don't participate in religion, then you must not be moral, right? Okay, so religion is the glue that holds society together, according to French thinker Durkheim. Religion protects genetic reproduction. That's an interesting one, right? But how does it do that? Well, it promotes male-female. That's one thing. Most religions do that, okay? But also, what? What happens when a good Jewish boy comes home and says, "Mama, I've met a Catholic nun," or "Mama, I've met a young Syrian woman," or "Mama, I've met an atheist"? She's not going to be very happy about it, right? Because so here the notion that it continues genetic reproduction is Irish Catholics don't marry English people, right? Catholics don't marry Jews. Jews don't marry Muslims. Different Hindu sects don't you know, like if you follow the branch of Shiva, you don't like Shivite. If you're a Shivite, you don't marry into a Hanuman sect. You certainly don't marry a Jain, which is a whole other religion. Right? So actually the notion here of religion protects genetic reproduction is it keeps things within a certain kind of community. It doesn't, hopefully your community is not so small that it hurts genetic reproduction because you start marrying your first cousins and your sisters. But that sort of thing generally doesn't happen. But the major idea here is just simply that it provides the usefulness that, you know, you're going to marry into the community. Sigmund Freud, of course, psychologist, says that religion fulfills certain neurotic needs. You're scared of dying. Do you believe in God who's going to make sure that when you die, things ain't so bad? Right? Or
guilty.
You're guilty, you know? Yeah. Eric Fromm, who was an associate of Freud, says, religion is a stable frame of reference. In other words, there's something about religion. And I would actually say that in some ways, I'll admit that I'm someone who believes in an ultimate reality. I don't hold it against people who only believe in the material universe. But I believe in an ultimate reality. But I can say that one of the reasons when I said that I was going to I said I was raised in a family that originally had been Pentecostalist, and then at 18, I converted to Catholicism because I thought that was the church you should belong to if you're a Christian. Because Catholicism is like, you know, 1700, 1800 years old. It's a stable frame of reference. Right? Yes?
So all these people, like, you know, Karl Marx and all these people, are they just talking about Christianity?
No, they're talking about all religions everywhere, but since they're in Europe, they have a tendency to talk about Christianity, but their ideas are...
Not all religions believe that if you're not working, you're not good, and not all religions believe that you cannot stand up for your rights. Some other religions promote that you should stand up for your rights.
Well, that's, of course, an interesting issue. Christianity also does that, but generally what happens is that as Europe and America were industrializing, there were churches who went along with the idea that we should.
So their context was Christianity and not, or did these people study?
Some of them were Jewish. But this is, of course, you know, basically one of the things that's really interesting, I thought, about the first chapter of this book is it's very white Eurocentric as far as it goes forward.
I was reading that religion protects genetic reproduction. This is the first time, like, I have studied Islam, and this is something that was very new to me, because that you cannot marry people from other societies or other faiths.
Islam is actually a very cosmopolitan religion. Christianity is actually a very cosmopolitan religion to a certain extent.
What is based on that?
It's based on the idea of the protecting genetic reproduction. That aspect is based on the idea that you're not going to marry. Religion is used to keep you from marrying people outside of your
society
or whatever. Now, if you were to go to Iraq instead of, I think, Pakistan, Islam in Pakistan is mostly Shia?
Sunni.
So if you were to go somewhere where there's Shia and Sunni, then you'd actually kind of see this idea. Oh, you don't marry a Sunni.
No, you do, but also Muslims marry Christians and
sure.
also marry you know, Jews.
It's a lot of like a lot of migration.
When that happens,
it is allowed.
Yeah. When it happens, what do they teach their children?
Well, as long as it is the people of the book, or if somebody is willing to convert, no matter which other culture or which other part of the world they are, they're welcome.
I would actually say that when you're, this is actually the issue of why I would rather deal with phenomenology and not deal with science, if that sounds right. It doesn't. Phenomenology works from the experience of people. And the difference is, science is what science does. And I'm not anti-science. This always happens when phenomenologists start talking. People start saying they're anti-science. I'm not anti-science, but what science does, its job is to explain. And as soon as you explain, you've made the boundary. Right? And so, you know, and of course, the very interesting issue, the reason why there are so many functionalist perspectives, and this is just four, is that the attempt that, is that the explanations don't do a very good job. And, you know, but what does it mean to explain? To explain means, if you go to the grocery store and you've got a good amount of coin in your pocket, you'll get quilted northern toilet tissue because it has more than one layer of paper. And those layers are called plies. Plie. It's French. So you get multi-ply. You get like, you know, 3-ply, 5-ply toilet paper. Instead of like Scott's brand, which is like 1-ply. Or what you get around here. The idea, I'm just saying this because all it means is a layer. So when you explain, you actually unfold things till you basically have a single layer. And so what that explaining is called then the reduction to one layer.
So could what they be saying, you know, he says religion protects genetic reproduction. And as she said, Islam does not forbid.
Yeah, people
yeah.
from other race, it's okay.
So, like, could you say that people who do say, oh, she's Catholic, we're Jews, we don't do that, that's their excuse? Is there, like, in each, or in the three main faiths that, you know, worldwide, whatever, is there a story similar to, like, in Christianity, you know, the Tower of Babel? Is it what a lot of people use to say, we don't?
Yeah, it's not that science. It's not that explanations don't come only come in science. Explanation is something that we do. We try to reduce everything down to just one reason.
So like it's like if their interpretation, because like I'm biracial, and on my mom's side of the family, there's certain members of our family who believe that since the Tower of Babel, because of the story, you know, story, they built the Tower to Heaven, knocked them down, everybody became different races, spoke different languages. So, like, in their families, they believe that you're not supposed to mix with peoples of other races.
Right.
Because God didn't intend that.
Right.
So, they use that as their interpretation. That's their excuse for why they don't allow interracial marriage.
Right.
So, could you...
That's their explanation. Let's not say it's an excuse. Let's just go ahead and say that they explain it that way.
So...
Because some people really believe it. So, it's not an excuse. They're not just trying to come up with an excuse.
So, then their explanation. So, in... John Balfour, is he speaking more of how the people use religion?
He's just trying to come up with a reason that he's wanting to say religion happens all over the world, and so all these people want to say that it happens because religion is useful, and each of them has discovered a different kind of usefulness, and so they try to reduce it down to what that one usefulness is. Now, the reason that I'm a phenomenologist is that I understand phenomenology doesn't explain. Phenomenology elucidates. And what that means is it throws light. And as you throw light on something and you wander around it and take a look at it and you go into it and you're throwing light in different regions, right? You begin to see that it's way more complex. And there's that word apply again. It's more complex. So one reduction to just one layer is simplex. So it's not simple, it's complicated, it's complex, right? Now, that's not to say the scientists don't realize that it's complex, but what they want to do is they want to at least get it down to this one layer so that they can then begin to build back up from that a reason why. As a phenomenologist, I don't really care why. I just simply know that there are 7.5 billion people in the world. A good portion of them have religious experiences. They have religious beliefs and all the rest of that. And while the religious beliefs and experiences have certain historical conditions that we can trace, right? I really want to understand how people who are living their life as atheists, theists, monotheists, polytheists, monists, pluralists, pantheists, panentheists. I mean, you know, you can use these taxonomies. You can categorize and put everybody in a box. But there'll always be people who will show up outside of boxes. So instead of trying to put everybody into a box, I just want to be like, hey, you're an existing human being, so let's talk about your experience. Share your experience with
them. Is Bowker a sociologist? Or?
Bowker, I believe, is a sociologist and a geneticist, so that would probably also be a reason why.
Like as far as this century of study, or is it like 1950s?
I think he's later. I can't remember exactly.
I was going to say that earlier, like, what a lot of these things, what people don't understand, is like, the increase in migration, and, like, our geostasis of where we've been has changed so much over, like, the last, like, 100 years, like, we're not in those same community groups anymore, so you are getting people that are migrating out now, and interracially married, or joining
right.
I think he's suggesting the religion, you know, promotes racism, if you look at that, this is what it means.
There is ways of taking it that way, or some people can. Like it's more of a personal inner, it's a perceptive thing.
Yeah, but it depends on your perceptions.
So
yes,
I mean,
that,
well, everything depends on that. But I think that you've got a point. I think if you're not careful, one of the problems that you run into with science like this, and since you study biology, you know this. One of the problems you run into is that it very well may be that the scientists are being extremely careful to say something. But just because they're being careful in how they say something doesn't mean it's not going to become common knowledge and be used for
things
like that.
Because not everybody is a scientist. They will
right.
take it as, okay, so it's promoting the race.
This is actually another phenomenological point. In phenomenology, we recognize that as something becomes common knowledge, it becomes common sense. And when it becomes common sense, it's taken for granted and it's not thought about anymore. Right, so you end up in a situation where, like I was kind of pointing out yesterday when I did the thing about the Newton and gravity. Everybody takes for granted that when I drop this, it's going to fall because of gravity. That's common sense. That's an incorrect usage of it. That doesn't mean that Newton is to be blamed for the fact that he came up with the theory of gravity and then 600 or 500 years later, people are just using it as a quick, thoughtless, common sense explanation, right? So that's always the thing, is that you've got to look at it. Now, the reason why in phenomenology, so for doing phenomenology of religion, we want to be careful in looking at these things is Because since science basically is trying to figure out how things connect together, and it's attempting to figure out how things connect together by, in one sense, flattening things out to see what's not connecting, right? Science is not, as one, the founder of phenomenology would say, science is not profound. That doesn't mean science is not broad, and it doesn't mean that science does not do things, very important things. But the purpose of science, it lacks a kind of profundity. But then we go in another direction, and that's the direction of religion. And religion very often is kind of narrow, but very profound. Right? So the purpose of philosophizing is to figure out how you can navigate between, you know, the scientific and the religious in such a way that you don't become narrowly deep or thinly broad. Right? So this religion is a stable frame of reference. Actually, I would say of the ones that are up there for the functionalists, that one, in one sense, probably allows for the most, probably allows for you to do the most philosophical exploration, for the simple reason all it's saying is that religion has a tendency to provide a stable frame of reference across time. Now,